This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In. I'm Layla Mutin on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Here we are. It's November. Holidays are upon us. I invite you to email me with any of your questions, comments, topics of interest for me to talk about on this podcast at radioprogram@AOL.com. You can send an email to radioprogram@AOL.com. Hey, last week I gotten a question from a colleague, Kristen, who is inquiring about what could be causing elevated hemoglobin A1C in somebody who's doing the low-carb diet correctly, where they shouldn't have a high average blood sugar anymore, but it should be coming down. What's going on there? Well, I was just reminded by someone that iron deficiency anemia may be the cause of an elevated A1C. As a matter of fact, iron deficiency needs to be corrected before any diagnostic or therapeutic decision is made based on hemoglobin A1C. So if your patient, your client, or you are on a low-carb diet, you're doing everything right, you're not having artificial sweeteners, even your triglycerides are nice and low, they're definitely under 100. If you're really doing it right, they're really under 80. They're even as low as 50 or 40, which is tremendous. But if the hemoglobin A1C remains high, it could be that you or the patient or client has iron deficiency anemia. That's a low hemoglobin, low hematocrit. Sometimes when iron stores like ferritin are low, it may adversely impact hemoglobin A1C, but not the way overt iron deficiency anemia would. So there's another answer to why a hemoglobin A1C can stay abnormally high despite all best efforts on a low-carb diet, the proper supplementation like berberine, as in CMCOR, or taking something like diaxanol, which is gymnema with chromium. Cinnamon as well is often helpful. So there might be another reason worth investigating. Iron deficiency anemia for chronic high blood sugar. All right. So we've got another, I've got an email from Mihai. Hello, Mihai. Mihai says, I could not exercise on an empty stomach. How do I improve my glycogen storage? Now, this is based on the fact that your carbohydrate stores have been depleted, and that's why you don't have energy for the exercise. Now, it could also be that if you're exercising first thing in the morning before you have breakfast, it could be that you're just not a morning person. Your engine isn't on until you've eaten something. I often feel that way in the morning, where I might prefer to exercise sometime after breakfast, especially mid-morning on a weekend. So for those who can't exercise on an empty stomach, my first question would be, what time of day is it? I'm assuming that sounds mostly like morning. And I wonder if this is true for Mihai. So time of day. Another thing is, many people will report that when they get up in the morning and before they even go to the gym, they might have a little snack. It might be a couple of nuts, maybe a couple of Brazil nuts. It might be half a piece of fruit or a very small piece of fruit, a couple of small apricots. Or for yet others, and I've even heard trainers even recommend this from time to time, have a half a cup of coffee. That's not decaf, that's high test. Having a caffeinated beverage or at least a little bit of it can be helpful in giving you a little get up and go, some go juice, so that you can go exercise, whether it's at the gym, whether it's in your living room, whether it's outside for a run, all of that. So, if you're not on a low-carb diet, if you're pretty much eating standard moderate carbohydrates, you likely have some glycogen storage. Now, if you're on a low-carb diet, a very low-carb diet or a ketogenic diet, because you're burning primarily fat for energy, there wouldn't be any loss of energy because we're making way more ATP. ATP is our energy currency. We're making way more of it in a fat-burning metabolism like lipolysis, ketosis, than we are on a blood sugar-burning metabolism. So those who wonder if they have glycogen storage issues, if you're on a moderate carb diet, it could be that, yeah, maybe you do need a little more glycogen, or it's the time of day, the morning, that's not working for you. Maybe you're better off working out in the afternoon or early evening, sometime after work and before dinner. But I know for athletes, they increase their glycogen storage by, you know, working out hard and then really packing on, really doing just a little more carb loading than usual. They're actually training their skeletal muscles and liver to increase their storage of glycogen, not by a whole lot, but still to some degree. Some people might have, you know, a smoothie or some beet juice or something like that to help with glycogen storage. So, Mahai, what I would say to you is, if you're on a moderate carbohydrate diet and you want to work out in the morning, you may want a little snack before you go. And even if you're doing yoga, where we know you should really have an empty stomach, if you want to snack on a little bit of something or even just a half a cup of coffee or tea, caffeinated, some type of caffeinated beverage, that might be helpful as well. It helps to get people going. Thank you for your question, Mahai. Now, the holidays are upon us. As I started saying earlier when I started this podcast, so because the holidays are upon us, let's talk booze, alcohol intake. Now, for many, the holidays can be an unraveling. It's a time to imbibe more than usual. It's a time for more occasion to go out and have drinks, holiday parties, visiting relatives, you're going somewhere and visiting relatives, vacations, that type of thing. Everything that's associated with the good cheer of holidays often does include alcohol. So, for those who do imbibe and don't want to imbibe too much, there are strategies. You'll see them, you know, on a lot of different health websites about, you know, drink a glass of water between any of your cocktails. Make sure before you go to a holiday party that you nibble on a little something so that you're not having a drink on an empty stomach, something like that. Now, I want to remind everyone that alcohol also has calories. It's 7 calories per gram. Let me give you a reference point on that. Protein and carbohydrate calories are 4 calories a gram. Alcohol is 7 calories a gram. Fat is 9 calories a gram. But here's the thing about alcohol. It's an insulin trigger, very much the way sugar is. In fact, it demands to be metabolized first, the way sugar does. All right? So, keeping in mind that it's an insulin trigger, if you're managing your weight, if you're managing your diet, you don't want to stray too much, you kind of have to pick and choose your insulin triggers over the holidays, or if you have a special occasion. You know, we're talking Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, all of them, everything, where you might indulge a little more than usual, not just in booze, but in food. I often tell my clients who are on the straight and narrow with their diet, they're doing well, they're maintaining a healthy weight, they feel great, they have good energy levels, they're afraid to go too far. I tell them, you have to choose which insulin trigger you want. Do you want to have a lot of carbohydrate with your main meal? I'm talking in the form of some kind of starch, bread, potato, or maybe it's going to be a dessert. Maybe it's going to be pumpkin pie. Maybe it's going to be something delicious like that, like cheesecake or chocolate. These are insulin triggers too. What I often tell clients is choose which one, especially if you know that over the holidays you will be indulging, whether in food or in drink, more than usual. Choose. Will it be the starchy carbohydrate at your main meal, say dinner? Or will it be a dessert after dinner? Or will it be that additional cocktail or wine or beer that you wouldn't normally have that you know you're going to have maybe another or maybe even a third of? These are all insulin triggers, and they all have, obviously, the capacity to store fat on our bodies. Now, you also want to take into consideration for those who do have the tendency to over-imbibe amongst others at a party or just because everyone is merry and that's what everybody is doing. Remember what a hangover is, what it consists of. It's a combination of dehydration and low blood sugar. That is really, in essence, what a hangover is. So that would be the reason, in between cocktails, to have a glass of water or seltzer or some other type of spritzer where you're having some mineral water, maybe with a couple of tablespoons of, say, pomegranate juice or cranberry juice or something like that. Now, is imbibing healthy? No, not necessarily. Even when talking about the Mediterranean diet, where red wine is included, I'm really not a fan of recommending red wine to anybody. But if you already drink, it's perfectly fine, as long as you don't go too far and it's not every day. Because regular drinking, even that one glass of red wine, has the ability to increase blood pressure over time. Also realize, as you're considering the amount of alcohol you will drink this holiday season, that it can be as addictive as sugar. That's why, for those of you who are recovering alcoholics, you know that you have more of a sweet tooth since you're no longer drinking. That's because Mother Nature gave us that original addiction, and that's to sugar. So our prehistoric ancestors would eat more fruit when it was available. Why? It's a survival mechanism to fatten up before the upcoming famine. So that's why in a recovering alcoholic, you will see them having more than usual, maybe a sugary cup of coffee, pie, a donut, a cookie. These are the things that are often available at, for instance, an AA meeting. Remember, to classify sugar and alcohol, what it does to our metabolism, of course, alcohol will be more toxic simply because of the alcohol content. And there are other ways that alcohol is more toxic. There are cancer risks of the colon, rectum, liver, pancreatic, breast. And a lot of that may have to do with its burning through all the B vitamins like folate. We need critical B vitamins for cancer prevention. So it could be that alcohol destroys these B vitamins. But you know what else does? So does sugar. It destroys all the B vitamins, practically. So it's very important when you do imbibe or over-imbibe that you take some additional B complex. It's probably a good idea. if you want more liver support as well, I would recommend taking milk thistle. That's the herb silymarin that helps detoxify the liver. Alpha-lipoic acid is helpful for liver support. So is phosphatidylcholine. Excellent for liver support, as is NAC, that's N-acetylcysteine, for liver support. Other ways you want to think twice, other reasons, rather, you want to think twice before overindulging in alcohol. I said earlier it can raise blood pressure, yes, especially if you're a frequent drinker, a regular drinker. It increases cortisol. That is one mechanism whereby it increases our blood pressure. It increases cortisol. And by this method of increasing cortisol, that's a stress hormone that puts us in chronic fat storage mode when we have too much of it. This increased cortisol robs our sleep. I don't know of any regular drinker who sleeps well. And I don't mean the one who overindulges or binge drinks and passes out. I'm talking about a regular drinker who sleeps well. More often than not, somebody who drinks regularly, a glass or two of wine with dinner is really all I'm talking about, will find that they wake up in the middle of the night for no good reason. That's that increased cortisol that's caused by alcohol that wakes us up too early, because that cortisol is supposed to be high in the morning, at an appropriate time in the morning when we're supposed to get up and start our day, not at 2 or 3 in the morning, which is what happens with alcohol. So this is how it robs our sleep. The other way it robs our sleep is it causes low blood sugar during the night. Remember, oftentimes if you're going out to dinner with friends, relatives to a restaurant and your table's not quite ready, they will send you to the bar where you might have a cocktail, a glass of wine, a beer. This whets your appetite. It actually causes a little bit of hypoglycemia, which then actually makes you hungry or hungrier for your meal. I hear all too often that those who are having a cocktail before dinner or even wine at dinner will have the tendency to eat a little more. It's because of the hypoglycemia that's caused by the alcohol. And when we're sleeping and we wake up for no good reason, it's because of that low blood sugar in the middle of the night. Low blood sugar is when A, we're hungry, B, we're kind of dizzy, clammy, anxious, we wake up, it doesn't feel very good, and that's a reason. And then, of course, our adrenals are called in to secrete cortisol, catecholamines. The other thing is, if you're trying to lose a few pounds, if you're trying to decrease your waistline, having a drink does not help you. There's an old study from 2005, the International Journal of Obesity, Alcohol and Adiposity, Effects of Quantity and Type of Drink and Time Relation with Meals. They studied over 3,000 men aged between 60 and 79 years old with no history of heart disease, stroke, or diabetes, drawn from general practices in 24 different British towns. And what they found was that men who consumed alcohol greater than a certain amount of units per week, equivalent to, two drinks per day of wine, beer, spirits, or mixed spirits cocktails, what they showed was an increase in body mass index, waist-to-hip ratio, waist circumference, and increases in body fat. So, higher alcohol consumption is positively associated with general and to a greater extent with central adiposity, that's belly fat, irrespective of the type of drink and whether the alcohol is drunk with meals or not. So having that wine with a meal and tempering the absorption of that alcohol, you have to remember that glass of wine is still an insulin trigger, and it's doing its job metabolically of putting you into fat storage. Remember that alcohol wants to be metabolized first, just like sugar, triggers insulin, which is a fat storage hormone. Another thing is, if you've noticed at all, I've noticed here, more and more people are being diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, a flutter of the heart that, gone unchecked, increases risk of stroke, adverse cardiovascular outcomes, heart attack. AFib, one reason that it may be on the rise, and especially amongst populations who are retired, people in their 60s, 70s, they're having more happy hour. They now have the occasion to drink on more regular occasions than maybe they did previously when they were working. So AFib is associated with adverse cardiovascular outcomes beyond stroke. They did a meta-analysis of 104 cohort studies, and United Kingdom researchers examined associations between atrial fibrillation and risks for various adverse cardiovascular events, kidney disease, and early mortality in 9.7 million patients, which 590,000 of those had atrial fibrillation, AFib. And during a median follow-up of 3 to 6 years, AFib was associated with significantly higher risk for peripheral artery disease, all-cause death, ischemic heart disease, chronic kidney disease, sudden cardiac death, cardiovascular-related death, stroke, heart failure. And these results were consistent across patient subgroups categorized by age, history of ischemic heart disease or stroke, and across various study characteristics like study population, the study location, the amount of follow-up that was done. So that's why today, because the holidays are upon us, we're talking booze, and I just wanted to remind you of all of its effects and to choose wisely and to pick your insulin triggers. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman, and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com.
This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.